Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, April 15, 2026, on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch ND for 30 days, and also on my YouTube channel at Radio Naturopath. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. All right, I hope Passover is almost over. And when it's over, I asked Ron if he would make pizza, so we might get to have pizza. Of course, when I have pizza, it has to be dairy and gluten-free. So we get cheese alternative, and then we put all kinds of vegetables on it and a little bit of healthy sausage and artichokes and sun-dried tomatoes, and it's really good. So that's what we'll probably have for our break the Passover. A lot of Jewish people have either pizza or Chinese when they break Passover. And our Chinese is okay. I would rather have pizza, so... Pasta would be nice too, but I think pizza is where we'll go. So in terms of my post-surgical stuff, again, we're sort of on the conservative means thing, except that I might be having a cortisone shot. It's not actually cortisone. It's methylprednisolone and bupivacaine. So that's on the schedule. If I feel a lot better a few days before I'm supposed to have that, I'm going to cancel it because I'm not feeling too bad. And I must say, my friends at Crossroads are doing a lovely job with me. I think little by little, I'm staying more and more in alignment. So I'm having less pain and I'm able to do more. That's what's going on there. Now we have to get the teeth fixed and then we have to make sure that everything's okay. I have to have some cancer screens next week, and if those go okay, then I could probably relax for a while. So that'll be nice. All right, so I found something in the news, and that's that this is taken from Meena Malhotra, who's an obesity specialist at the Heal and Cure Medical Center. And here are some foods that she suggests you cut back on to lose weight. They're going to be shocking. They're going to be weird things like hazelnuts and kiwi fruit. No, they're not. It's going to be, you're going to be so shocked when you hear what they are. So the first one she says is, wait for it, refined carbs and breads. Unfortunately, certain breads and wheat products have a very high glycemic load. So they spike glucose very fast, which leads to a spike in insulin. So, you know, if you're eating a lot of pastries, if you're eating a lot of bread, if you're eating white pasta, they're going to raise your blood sugar pretty fast. And when you have too much insulin around, insulin is a storage hormone, and it will cause you, if the insulin doesn't take the sugar that's in your blood and put it into your cells, only so much sugar can fit into your cells. So insulin is a traffic director, and it will direct the traffic to your cells. And once that's topped up, then it has to send the extra sugar someplace else. So it turns it into triglycerides, and that ultimately gets stored as fat. So the more insulin you have around, the more you're going to do fat storage. So when you spike sugar very fast, that's what happens. You have too much sugar and you can't absorb all the sugar. So it gets stored as fat, and insulin will convert it there for you. So when your insulin levels are high, your body's in fat storage mode, not fat burning mode, because insulin is a fat storing hormone. And when you reduce insulin, you're going to see, so with reducing refined carbs, you're going to see less bloating, more stable energy, and gradual fat loss, especially around your belly. So if you have that menno belly that so many of my patients are concerned about, starch and sugar, reducing starch and sugar, it's not rocket science. It's simple stuff that starch and sugar are the first thing that's going to increase that that midriff belly thing. So the other thing is that alcohol will do that too. And then she's going to go on to talk about alcohol. So let's look at that. Sugar sweetened beverages, fruit juice, and energy drinks. And she calls it the fridge cigarette. That's hilarious. So when you drink liquid calories, they don't give satiety. When you have liquid, it doesn't set off your satiety signals in the way that other things do. Now, if you're drinking a smoothie that has a lot of fiber in it, that will probably make you, that has fiber and protein, like a protein shake that has protein, and maybe there's some flax seeds or chia seeds in it, that's going to set off your satiety signals. But if it's straight up juice, it's probably not going to do that. And if you're just having lattes and things like that, and especially if they have sugar in them from the cafe, that's probably not going to make you feel satiated either. So when you take those liquid calories, you're not going to feel full, and you can drink 200 or 300 calories and still feel hungry. So most of them have fructose in it, which acts like alcohol in the liver and leads to fatty liver and insulin resistance. So when she's talking about containing fructose, she means soda. So soda often has high fructose corn syrup in it. It's true that fruit juice has fructose in it, but if there's no fiber in the fruit juice, then the fructose is going to be a problem. If there is fiber in it, then it's less of a problem because the fiber slows the absorption of the fructose. So you can eat fruit because fruit has lots of fiber and it has lots of other nutrients in it to help to slow the absorption of that sugar. So fructose, like I said, it acts like alcohol in the liver and can also lead to fatty liver and insulin resistance. Again, we're talking here about probably soda that has high fructose corn syrup in it. When you cut those out alone, that can make a big difference in weight and metabolic health. And a lot of energy drinks, that just the ones that you get at the grocery store that are pre-made, and you know, electrolyte drinks, may have high fructose corn syrup in it. So you have to look and make sure and see if that's what's going on. So some of those drinks have what's called crystalline fructose. That's still going to be a problem because it's unopposed by fiber and unopposed by all the other nutrients that are in regular fruit. So fruit juice, people think it's healthy, but it can be really bad for metabolic health. When you remove the fiber from fruit and just drink the juice, it's basically sugar hitting your system very fast. So if you're going to drink juice, it's better to, like, if it's convenient for you to buy juice and you enjoy it, I recommend getting something that's called a smoothie. So if the product says that it's a smoothie in it, it's going to have fruit purees in it. It's still way too many calories. Like a small bottle, an 8 or 16 ounce bottle of smoothie is going to have 300 plus calories in it. When I have juice, I like to have a glass of juice in the morning, but what I have is labeled as a smoothie. Either it's a functional juice or it's a juice that's labeled as a smoothie. I have a quarter of a cup and that's it. And then I eat actual fruit. And so that's all I have. And it helps to wake me up in the morning because, you know, I get out of bed and, you know, residual from the long back syndrome, is I feel like I have some blood sugar issues and some not exactly POTS, but, you know, orthostatic intolerance. And having a little bit of fruit juice first thing in the morning helps me. But I wouldn't have straight up apple juice. I would either have something that's labeled, that's marketed as a smoothie, or I could make a smoothie, but I don't tend to do that. So let's get real. But something that is marketed as a smoothie, which means it's going to have fruit puree in it, therefore fiber. I also eat a little bit of fruit. And lately I've been taking the fruit and smearing it with almond butter. And that's really nice because if you put the almond butter in, then it's going to slow down the absorption of the sugars in the fruit and then it has plenty of fiber in it. And so the other thing I'll do is functional juices. So I'll do watermelon water, for example. And again, I don't drink a lot of it. I'm having it first thing in the morning, I'm going to have a quarter of a cup and that's it. And I also might have pomegranate juice. And pomegranate juice is super high in antioxidants. And the watermelon water is very hydrating and has L-citrulline in it, which is helpful for circulation and is helpful for lowering blood pressure. And then the pomegranate juice has ellagic acid in it, which is wonderful for tightening up your blood vessels and lowering cholesterol. So, and again, I'm not going to sit and drink a bottle of pomegranate juice. I'm going to have a quarter of a cup to start my day. Now, if I were on a long bike ride and, you know, it was hot and I was sweating a lot, I might have more juice. I might have more pomegranate juice, definitely watermelon water, definitely coconut water. And definitely if I'm at a rest stop and they have some juice, I might have some. Although I'm not a big fan of straight up apple juice. I'm not a big fan of juices that don't have fiber in them. I would much rather have a smoothie. And one of my favorites to get are mango blends. So they have mango, they have pureed mango and a bunch of other things in them. And so that's not going to shoot up my blood sugar as much. But drinking straight up juice, having just straight up orange juice, again, unless you're having just a quarter of a cup, it's not a great idea. If you're having a big glass, like 8 ounces or more, that's probably too much, unless you're about to go and do a whole lot of exercise. Now, mind you, if you drink juice and you have excellent blood sugar and excellent hemoglobin A1C, don't worry about it. Juice is not the worst thing that you can drink. It's not good if you're about to go to your desk job at the office and sit there for 8 hours. And you know, the first thing you're having is a big glass of juice. That's not a good thing for you. But like for me, because I have days like that where I have to go sit in my office and see patients and stuff. So quarter cup and that's it. And it's either a smoothie or it's a functional juice like watermelon, coconut, or pomegranate. So you can eat fruit, because fruit has fiber in it, and fiber slows the absorption of that fructose and also has other nutrients in it to help you metabolize the sugars. Wait, this is going to be so shocking to you. Hazelnuts and kiwi fruit, right? No. Ultra-processed food isn't good for you. Who knew? So fast food, processed packaged foods, chips, these are not great for you, and they can make you gain weight. So ultra-processed foods contribute to obesity as bad as ground baking is florals for spring, or water is wet, or the sun is hot. But let's talk about it anyway. Ultra-processed foods are full of refined carbs, unhealthy fats, and preservatives. It makes them one of the greatest enemies to your metabolic health. So one of the deals that happens is if you're eating stuff that has preservatives in it, your body doesn't know what to do with those. So one of the things, it can't digest them. So one of the things it's going to do is it's going to send them on through, and it's going to create inflammation because your body looks at them and goes, what is this? And it's going to fight against them. Now you have inflammation. Once you have inflammation, you have swelling. So the more processed stuff you have, the more chemicals you put in your body, the more swollen you're going to be, just because your body's going to try to figure out a way to get rid of them because it doesn't recognize them. Something it doesn't recognize, it's going to put up its dukes, and you're going to make some antibodies. Once you make antibodies, your body's going to come and send some fluid there and surround it with inflammation to keep it to keep you protected from it. That's how that works. So chemicals themselves can make you gain weight, and it's going to be to an extent water weight. And then if you have those chemicals around, they're going to interfere, because if they're in your digestive system, they're going to interfere with your digestion. If you have a chemical sitting on a site that could be used to absorb vitamin B12 or protein or a healthy carbohydrate or vitamin A, it's not going to be able to do that because it's the spot's taken up by a chemical. So the less fake-o chemicals you eat, the healthier you're going to be, and the more efficient your digestion is going to be. And if you have efficient digestion, you're going to have better metabolism. And so, remember, there was a book called The Science of Skinny, and The Science of Skinny was all about shocking. Don't eat junk. Don't eat chemicals. Eat whole foods that don't have unfood in them. Shocking, right? So if you eat whole real food that doesn't have any preservatives in it, you're going to tend to be thinner. How cool is that? So ultra-processed foods tend to be calorie-dense and nutrient-poor. They also have unhealthy fats. We already talked about the preservatives, but also don't forget about the unhealthy fats. So if you have a potato chip that's been fried in a seed oils aren't that good for you, and especially when you go ahead and deep fry them, they are polyunsaturated fats, and when they are deep fried, they can turn into trans fats, and your body doesn't do well with trans fats. It will use the trans fats. So remember that every cell in your body is covered with cell membranes. Cell membranes are made of phospholipids. So your body will take whatever lipids are around to make phospholipids. What you want them to use is omega-3 fatty acids. So omega-3 fatty acids and monounsaturated fats, omega-9 fatty acids as well. So, and then a healthy amount of certain kinds of omega-6 fatty acids like gamma linolenic acid. Those are anti-inflammatory. Your body uses those in the prostaglandin series to make anti-inflammatory compounds like PGE3, prostaglandin E3. Your body will use omega-3s to make prostaglandin E1 and E3, which are both anti-inflammatory. If you have too much PGE2 series, the prostaglandin E2, you're going to make more leukotrienes, which are inflammatory. And so omega-6 fatty acids, there's a lot of omega-6 fatty acids in seed oils. And then if you take those seed oils and you deep fry them, now you're going to heat them. And when you heat them, you break the nice double bonds and they will hook up as trans fats. Trans fats do not function well in your body. Trans fats will raise your cholesterol. Your body's, and I'm not sure what the mechanism of trans fats raising cholesterol. My thought is that because you're eating the trans fats, your body will take, your body needs cholesterol to, it's part of every cell membrane in your body. And your body uses, like I said, whatever fat is around to make your cell membranes. So it will use healthy cholesterol to make cell membranes. But if there's trans fat around, your body's going to sense that it's using this crummy fat, and there's not as much cholesterol around to do what cholesterol does. Cholesterol is there for cell membranes. It's there as a precursor to your reproductive hormones and other steroid hormones. It's there to help you make vitamin D and many other things as well. So if you don't have, if you have more trans fats around, your body goes to use the trans fats to do whatever and says, okay, this is the wrong kind of fat. I need to make more cholesterol so I can shore up those cell membranes that are, I'm now using trans fats to make. And that may be one of the mechanisms by which it happens. The other thing is that trans fats have, they're more likely to oxidize. And even you have oxidative damage, once you have oxidative damage, you're damaging cells. You're damaging cells inside your blood vessels. You're damaging cells everywhere in your body. Once you have oxidative damage, then your body, then you have deterioration. And when your body sees damage to cells, especially in the blood vessels, but other places too, it needs to repair them. And one of the things you use to repair any cell is cholesterol. Why? Because cholesterol is part of the cell membrane of every cell in your body. So anything that you consume that causes oxidative stress is going to make you make more cholesterol. And that includes trans fats, and that includes hydrogenated fats. And you're going to get hydrogenated fats if you eat a potato chip, for example, that's deep fried in a seed oil. So if you must eat a potato chip, I really recommend, if you're going to eat a potato chip and you want a bag of potato chips, who doesn't love potato chips? I mean, I guess some people don't love them. I have to be careful with them because, you know, that saying, you can't eat just one. It's true. Although that brand that said that, I don't like them that much. I really love a good hearty kettle type chip. But the best thing, if you're going to buy a chip like that, you want to make sure that it's fried in an oil that's not going to damage you. So you can get potato chips that are deep fried in avocado oil. And avocado oil has a monounsaturated fat, so it's much less likely to break down and give you oxidative stress. So there are great brands that have avocado oil as the sole oil in it. So you're having basically potatoes and avocado oil. And then what you do is you get a little bowl out, you know, a small bowl, and you take a handful and put it in the bowl, wrap up the bag and put it away. Do not eat 3/4 of the bag or even the whole bag. And learn to train yourself to make servings of things. That is what I do. When I want a high calorie snack, I take a little bit, and I love a good chip. But when I have chips, I don't have them all the time. And when I have a potato chip, I like to have avocado oil potato chip. And I don't have them that much because they sit really heavy in my stomach. So I have them sometimes, but not all the time. I do better with cassava chips. And the cassava chips are fried in healthy oil as well. And cassava, I feel better when I have the cassava chips than if I eat potato chips, because cassava has a resistant starch in it. The potatoes have resistant starch in it, but I definitely feel better eating the cassava chips. Like if I have a little snack of cassava chips, I feel better than if I have a snack of avocado chips. Recommend trying cassava chips. There's a good brand in the store that you can get, and they sell them everywhere now. You can definitely get them at any of your favorite health food stores, and you can get them at the supermarket too in the chip aisle. They cost a little bit more, but they're worth it. But look for the chips that are made of cassava, and they're fried in healthy oil as well. Again, don't sit and eat a bag of them. It's not a good idea, because that will, it's still a starch, but it's a better starch to eat than a pastry or a refined, a white bread. So that's an interesting thing. Where does sourdough fit in all this? I would say that for most people, that it really depends on the person. You can't make a general statement. But sourdough, the cool thing about sourdough is because sourdough has probiotics in it, so that's helpful. Sourdough is fermented, so once you start fermenting things, so what is sourdough? Sourdough is a bread that that has probiotic in it, and it has prebiotic in it. The prebiotic is the starch that's in the bread. The probiotic is what's in the ferment, in the SCOBY, if you will, and the whatever microorganisms are fermenting the bread. And then there are postbiotics, and a postbiotic is simply something that when you have a probiotic eating a prebiotic, it makes a postbiotic. And a postbiotic could be lots of things. It could be lactate. So you know how sourdough has that lovely sour taste. And if you like that sour taste, which I love a really sour sourdough. That sour taste is basically lactic acid. And so it's an acid. And organic acids are good for your digestion. They're also somewhat antimicrobial, but they move your digestion along. I remember, please don't judge. A long time ago, I did research on animals. I did it in university, and then I did it at when I worked for the pharmaceutical industry. And we had an animal model of colic. And in the animal model of colic, what you do is you inject an organic acid into the poor mouse's tummy, and it gives it colic. It makes the intestines contract. Well, guess what? If you eat organic acids, and what counts as an organic acid? Lactic acid, which is going to be in anything fermented. Lactic acid is in your yogurt, it's in your cheese, and it's in kefir, and it's going to be in your sourdough as well. And then vinegar. Vinegar has acetic acid in it. So acetic acid is also an organic acid. They are mild. They're like a carminative. A carminative herb is something that mildly irritates your colon and stimulates movement through the colon, through the whole digestive system, really. It stimulates motility of your digestive system. So when you eat things like oregano and marjoram and rosemary and fennel and anise, they have essential oils in them. The way they work is that it's slightly knocking against the walls of your digestive system and saying, hey, contract, move it along. And that's why carminative herbs are good for gas, because they, if your gas is stuck, it'll say, get going. And so organic acids do that as well. So one of the reasons that probiotics are good for you is the organic acids, the postbiotics that they make. They make other postbiotics as well, like B vitamins. So when you have a fermented sourdough, you're going to have more bioavailability of B vitamins. So if you eat the sourdough, I've had sourdough that was made from poor quality white flour, and I didn't like it. But there are some sourdoughs that are made with very hearty wheats. So if they're made from einkorn, or if they're made from emmer, or just a really hearty whole wheat flour, then they can be pretty low glycemic. They can be relatively low glycemic. You shouldn't sit and eat half a loaf of sourdough. But if you're having a bowl of soup and you want to have a little piece of sourdough with it, with a little bit of organic butter on it, I think that's a good thing. And again, some people can't even do that. It all depends. So like in the context of a day where you're not eating any refined sugar, and you know, your day looks like maybe some yogurt and some berries and some nuts and seeds, and your lunch is some kind of veggie and protein, and your dinner is some kind of veggie and protein. If you have a slice of sourdough with that dinner, you're probably going to be okay, you know. And if it's organic sourdough and it's doesn't have any preservatives in it, that's probably all right, even though it is a starchy food. But when you start overdoing starchy foods, so say most of your dinner, like you have a bread bowl that your soup is in, and you eat the bread bowl along with the soup, even if it's sourdough, that's probably too much. So it's all about, you know, it's portions as well. Remember that one of the ways to eat low carb is to take your favorite carb and eat less of it. That's something that I try to do. So when I have a pint of ice cream, the pint of ice cream can last a week or two because I try not to eat the whole thing at once. And I've trained myself. So, you know, a few bites are satisfying. And if you can train yourself to do that, you want to think about that. So big shout out to Jaden Keone Tita and Jill Coleman and Jillian Sarno Tita, because a long time ago when they were promoting the metabolic effect, they talked about when you're eating a food that you love, that's maybe a carb or a dessert, you take a few bites. And so the higher glycemic or lower in fiber your carb is, the fewer bites that you take and the smaller your bite should be. They pointed out that after about the third bite, you're just eating to eat. You're at that bliss point and you're just eating to eat. It doesn't taste as good. The first three bites are what tastes really good. So if you can train yourself to enjoy those three bites and that's it, you're going to have a lot of pleasure and less carbs. So it makes sense to do that. A lot of ultra processed foods want you to reach that bliss point. So the bliss point is when you're eating your bag of conventional potato chips, you can't eat just one, you can't eat just two, you can't eat just three, you keep going. When you have one slice of pizza, what do you want after that slice of pizza? Another slice of pizza. How about after that? Yet another slice of pizza. Now you're in for 1,000 calories, which is most of your calories for the day, especially if you've been sitting around. So processed foods is an issue. So then the other thing she talks about, the ultra processed foods, calorie dense, nutrient poor, they alter your satiety. So you end up eating more. That's what I'm talking about, that bliss point. And when you reduce those, your cravings can go down significantly and you feel more in control of your eating. Then she talks about, which is very good because you don't often hear a conventional doctor, and maybe she's not super conventional, but she talks about don't eat non-organic animal products. So that's beef, poultry, fish, any animal, and dairy as well. Non-organic meats and dairy are typically loaded with hormones and inflammatory compounds. So let's talk about that. So your beef, if it's not organic, the animals could be eating corn. And when they eat corn, they make more arachidonic acid. And what do we say about arachidonic acid? Arachidonic acid is inflammatory. When you have inflammation, you have insulin and you have fat storage. The other thing is when you make inflammatory compounds, your body wants to protect you from them. So it makes more fat to store the inflammatory compounds. So the less chemicals you eat, the less you weigh. So non-organic meats have poor quality fat in them, whereas grass-fed and finished beef is going to have omega-3 fatty acids in them, which are good for you. The same ratio of omega-6 to omega-3 that basically, you know, deep sea fish have. And animals that are fed on corn. Again, so if you have dairy and the animal was fed on corn, it's not going to have nearly the omega-3 fatty acids in it, and it's not going to have the vitamin K2. So animals that eat grass, cattle that eats grass that gives you dairy, their milk has more omega-3 fatty acids, it has less inflammatory omega-6 fatty acids, and also will have more vitamin K2. Vitamin K2 is really good for your bones, your bone strength, and it have conjugated linoleic acid in it. Conjugated linoleic acid is something that also regulates blood sugar and insulin. So if you eat dairy from grass-fed animals, you're going to get that conjugated linoleic acid. You can take conjugated linoleic acid as a supplement, but it doesn't work as well as if you eat it in a food. So your beef and your dairy from grass-fed animals is going to be higher in that stuff. And you could also eat sheep, lamb, and goat, if you're into such things, as long as they are exclusively grass-fed and they're not getting feed that's high in corn. Corn is really not good for them. And really, factory-fed beef, maybe being fed candy. There's trucks there was a situation where there was a truck that overturned and it was full of red chewy candies that were meant for cattle. That's so bad for you. So if you get grass-fed and finished beef, or if you get it from your local farmer who tells you exactly what the animal's been eating, then you're going to do a lot better. So Dr. Malhotra talks about switching to cleaner sources. Healthy packaged food like granola and protein bars, flavored yogurt, and gluten-free snacks can also be problematic. They can be marketed as healthy even though they have high sugars, refined carbs, or sugar substitutes. So when I have a protein bar, unless I'm on a long bike ride, I try not to eat the whole thing. So first thing in the morning, lately I've been having fruit with almond butter, and that's been working really well for me. That was a thing I started because it was Passover, and then I wasn't going to eat my protein bars because they have legumes in them. And Ashkenazi Jews, if they observe the no kidney oat rule, we don't eat legumes on Passover. And so a lot of your protein bars have pea protein in them. So I wasn't going to have that. But when I have I try to get good quality protein bars that don't have any junk in them. But they are really high in calories. You have to think of them as a meal replacement. And so you can't just have them as a snack through the day because, you know, a whole protein bar is going to be 200-300 calories. And you have to factor that into your day based on what you're doing. Again, if you're on a really long bike ride or a day of working outside really hard, if, you know, you're a person who's a laborer or, you work in a warehouse and you're getting 10,000 steps a day, having a protein bar is probably fine. Just make sure that it doesn't have any junk in it. And you have to look at flavored yogurt too. That can have a lot of sugar in it. And when I get yogurt, I don't do great with dairy, so I try to limit my dairy. I've found a very clean, yogurt that I get, the plain yogurt. It's basically coconut. It's thickened with a bit of tapioca starch, and then it has a great probiotic profile in it. And I get the plain and I dress it up. When you get the plain, it has no sugar in it. It tastes like real yogurt. If I want it a little sweet, I dump a bunch of cinnamon in it. Remember, cinnamon will make things taste sweet and helps to regulate your blood sugar. And if you sweeten something with cinnamon, you may need less sweetener to make it, to get to a point where it's palatable to you. And then I drip in maybe a teaspoon of honey or maple syrup, which is going to be much better for me than refined sugar that you put in. And again, one way to eat low carb is to cut your portion. So instead of having a sugar sweetened yogurt that's going to have, 20 calories, you're going to have a teaspoon of maple syrup, which has, I said 20 calories, I meant 20 grams of sugar. And 20 grams of sugar is going to have a lot of calories. Whereas if you have a teaspoon of maple syrup, you're looking at maybe 20 calories, which is not much, and it's not much sugar either. And it gives it a lot of flavor. Honey as well. If you get a raw local honey, you can stir it in. And honey and maple syrup both have other things that make them healthy. They have flavonoids and B vitamins and a little bit of fiber. And they can help to regulate blood sugar as long as you don't pound them. But what you should do is, if you're going to put maple syrup in your yogurt, you start with a sugar-free, an unsweetened yogurt, and then add a little bit of maple syrup at a time and see if you can, if it's palatable to you with just a little bit of syrup. And I've been finding I'm putting a full teaspoon of maple syrup in, and it's probably too much. I could probably put half of it in, especially because I eat the yogurt with actual fruit. I put actual berries in it, and sometimes I put goji berries in it and seeds. No seeds during the only seed you can have quinoa if you follow this version of kidney oat. You can have quinoa and you can have chia seeds on Passover, probably because they skated by, because when the rules were made, the Eastern European rabbis didn't know about chia seeds and quinoa. That's kind of a new world thing. Chia seeds, I think, they're both their origins are in South America. Nobody knew about those when we were living in Eastern Europe. And I don't think the Sephardic Jews, but the Sephardic Jews do not follow the kidney oat rule because their diet is so high in kidney oats. So they eat rice. And I remember one year we had a Sephardic Seder. And it was great because we had rice and they make their harosa. So you, in, during the Seder, you make this concoction that's supposed to represent the mortar and bricks that the Hebrews used to build the pyramids. And it's actually delicious. Go figure. So what you do is you take apples and walnuts. You take apples and walnuts and dump in a bunch of cinnamon and some Passover wine and you chop it up and that's harosis. And it's delicious. So that's Ashkenazic, Eastern European Jewish harosis. But harosis from Western Europe, the Sephardic harosis, has dates in it because they grow dates there. They tend to be, you know, the Sephardim lived in Spain. Now, in the north of Spain is like, you know, Madrid is even with New Jersey. But the south of Spain is even with Arizona, and it's actually desert-like. So they can grow dates down. They can grow dates and oranges, and they can grow tropical fruit down there. There are Sephardic Jews also in North Africa, so in Morocco and Algeria and countries around that area. So they grow tropical fruit, and they can grow dates. So your harosa is made with dates, and anything made with a date is delicious. That's going to be extra sweet. It definitely has fiber in it. I had a patient say to me the other day, I have to be careful how many dates I eat, because if I eat more than three, I'm running for the bathroom. So for some people, dates are very effective. They might as well be a prune. And one of the jokes during Passover is that you get a little stopped up if you eat too much matzah. I don't seem to have that problem because I'm eating all this, because fruits and vegetables are kosher for Passover, and I'm eating plenty of those. I just have to wonder how much people eat in the way of fruits and vegetables. I think a lot of people don't eat as much as I do anyway, because I'm having produce at every meal and with snacks and stuff. So I actually have to be careful how much I eat, or I'm using the bathroom a lot throughout the day. So, but doing regular produce is a good idea. So if you're going to eat a packaged food, look at the ingredients and don't make it the basis of your diet. Unless, I mean, you have, if you're eating a healthy protein bar, you have to kind of think of it as a meal replacement, depending on what your activities for that day are. And if you're not getting results, this is one of the things that Jaden Caone and Jill and Jillian talked about, which was if you're in a plateau and you're eating sort of processed healthy food, get rid of those, eat only whole food, and see if you start moving again. It's the calories and sometimes it's the carbohydrates as well. So over time that can keep you in fat storing mode and increase your hunger. If you can eat a bigger volume of food, so then you're going to be less hungry. So that's why salads are really good for that. Stir fries are really good for that. When you eat a lot of fiber, it's very satisfying and there's not a lot of calories, and that's a really good way to go. All right, so those are some foods that can be problematic. Let's review them once again. So the foods that can be problematic are going to be refined carbohydrates and breads and pastries and things like that. Ultra-processed food, things, fast food, things that are processed and packaged, and chips and snacks like that. And healthy packaged foods. These are all can be issues. And don't forget also things like juice, especially if it doesn't have fiber in it. All right, so I have another topic, which is let's talk about early menopause and cardiovascular disease. So if you get your menopause early, you can be more likely to have cardiovascular disease, which is unfortunate. So this article says that early menopause is linked to a 40% higher risk of cardiovascular disease. So let's see, and I could probably speak to that right now, but let's see what the article says. So if you go through natural menopause before age 40, you have a 40% higher risk of lifetime risk of coronary heart disease. Black women are three times as likely to experience premature menopause as white women. Untreated menopause symptoms like night sweats and sleep disturbances can undermine the heart healthy habits that lower cardiovascular disease. So if you don't sleep, we know that interrupted sleep is bad for cardiovascular disease, because we talked all about how it's really important to have blackout at night, to have no light, because and the reason that no light is helpful is because it lowers your cortisol, and it lowers your cortisol, lowers your insulin, and it raises your melatonin, so you sleep better. So you don't want to do things that raise cortisol in around your sleep. So you don't want to like watch, probably not a good idea to watch the pit right before you go to sleep. And it's probably not, it's definitely not a good idea to use excessive screens right before you're trying to go to sleep, because screens, the blue light is very stimulating. It raises cortisol. And, if you eat carbohydrates cause an increase in cortisol. So if you have sweets before you try to go to sleep, you're going to have a harder time falling and staying asleep. So, and then anything that interrupts your sleep. So eating too much carbohydrate can increase your risk of cardiovascular disease. And then the carbohydrate, which then interrupts your sleep, that also increases your risk of cardiovascular disease. No fun, right? So experts say women should share your menopause history with your doctor and focus on blood pressure, cholesterol, strength training, and stress management to protect your long-term heart health. When you go through menopause before age 40, there's a 40% higher lifetime risk of coronary heart disease. That's what coronary heart disease means, that you're going to get blockages in the coronary arteries. Those are the arteries that bring blood and nutrients directly to the heart muscle. And when those get acutely blocked and you can't get blood and oxygen to the heart muscle wall, you can first get ischemia and then you can get an infarction. Infarction is where you have damage to the heart muscle wall because of lack of nutrients and oxygen. And that's called an MI, a myocardial infarction, or a heart attack. So the premature menopause is when the ovaries stop functioning and menstrual periods stop before age 40. There's current evidence that suggests that 3-4% of women may experience some form of menopause before age 40, which is higher than the previous 1% estimate for premature menopause. And Black women are 3 times as likely to experience premature menopause as white women. And it doesn't say, maybe later in the article it says why, but I'm going to guess that it's because overall in the United States, this may not be true in Africa if they're not in a region where they're being oppressed. In the United States, it's stressful to be a Black person. So you have higher stress, you have socioeconomic stressors, and stress will bring on your menopause sooner. So if you have higher cortisol, cortisol is suppressive to reproductive hormones, so you're more likely to get your menopause sooner. So of my mother, my sister, and myself, I was the youngest to achieve menopause. Now, my menopause happened at 51, which is the median age. It's not a bad age for menopause. But my sister stopped her periods at 53 and my mother at 55. And the reason for that is probably because my mother had plenty of stress when she was in her 50s, but she didn't exercise like I did. She did exercise. She, you know, and her exercise was getting on a treadmill for half an hour most days of the week. But for me, I was doing, you know, thousands of miles of bike riding a year. So that probably caused me to have my menopause a little earlier than I would have if I had not been doing that, because my sister went at 53 and my mother went at 55. So, but 51 is okay. We're talking about people who get their menopause before 40. Natural menopause and also surgical menopause is going to, any kind of menopause is going to increase your risk for cardiovascular disease. It's the absence of, or the reduction of the estrogen and progesterone that's doing it. So at Northwestern University, they analyzed data from over 10,000 postmenopausal women across 6 major U.S. population base from 1964 to 2018 and found the 40% higher lifetime risk of heart attack or fatal coronary heart disease held up regardless of race. And the lead author, Priya Frerny, who was the assistant professor of medicine at Northwestern, said the findings should be empowering, not alarming. We're talking about an event that happens before the midpoint of someone's life, and this is an opportunity so you can implement positive changes to help to prevent it. So Stephanie Falbione, who's the director of the Menopause Society, said that the connection between menopause and heart health stems from hormones. That's what I said. It has to do with the early loss of estrogen, which promotes heart, brain, and bone health, especially in younger women. And a cascade of changes occurs as natural estrogen declines. Your muscle mass decreases. Your visceral fat increases. Fat moves to the belly. Our arteries stiffen. Our cholesterol goes up and our blood pressure goes up. All of these things taken together in a few years before and after menopause lead to an environment that's less healthy. For most cases of premature menopause have no clear explanation though conditions like autoimmune diseases, infections, inflammatory conditions, genetic mutations, and also excessive cardio can bring it on. So Black women face a higher early menopause risk. Black women experience premature menopause at more than 3 times the rate of white women, 15.5% compared with 4.8%. That's a lot. The 40% increase in heart disease risk applies regardless of race. The sheer frequency of premature menopause among Black women means the condition carries a far greater population level effect. And Black women with premature menopause live an average of 18.2 years free of heart disease after 55, compared to 19.1 for Black women who reach menopause at a typical age. So the study's authors point to weathering, the theory that chronic racial stress, that's what I said, accelerates biological aging as one possible driver of the higher rates. High cortisol, if you're stressed, you have higher cortisol. You have higher cortisol, you have higher blood sugar, you have higher insulin. More insulin means more inflammation, means more oxidative damage to your cardiovascular system, which means you're going to be more likely to have coronary artery blockages and issues with your heart. Chronic stress is not just emotional. It can affect your blood pressure, sleep, inflammation, eating patterns, physical activity, and how consistently you can care for yourself. So you want to get a holistic picture of your patients' lives, including caregiving responsibilities, financial strain, and the pressure to keep pushing through. And stress is a real cardiovascular risk factor. So perimenopause and postmenopause are what the study's authors call a unique window of opportunity to measure, monitor, and modify cardiovascular risk. It's when risk factors like blood pressure, cholesterol, and blood sugar often start to shift, and catching the changes early can make the biggest difference. You don't look at the finding and think it's only 1 year. You look at and say, this is our opportunity to intervene sooner. And you want to check blood pressure, cholesterol, blood sugar, sleep and smoking status, review pregnancy and family history, talk about exercise and nutrition, and whether to get more aggressive about risk factor treatment. There was a Finnish study that suggested menopause transition may be the underappreciated opportunity to slow cardiovascular aging overall. When you seize that window, you want to treat menopause symptoms, because menopause symptoms affect your quality of life, increase stress, and worsen sleep, which is huge. Untreated symptoms can undermine the very habits that protect the part. Women are not sleeping because they have night sweats or mood issues and menopause-related sleep disturbances. It makes it more difficult to do the things that help with heart health, like exercising regularly and paying attention to your diet. Makes sense, right? Women approaching menopause need to double down on efforts to maintain strength, which means strength training at least twice a week. Muscle regulates metabolism. Your skeletal muscle is metabolically active tissue, and the more you have, while I'm sitting here talking to you, my hefty thigh muscles are burning fat for me. So they're metabolically active, and they actually increase your testosterone. And when you have increased testosterone, you have things like increased sex drive. It's a positive spiral upwards. If you make more, you will make more testosterone just by doing resistance training immediately. So like if you want to have a nice evening with your honey, go to the gym and lift weights. My joke is your partner says to you, hey, honey, you want to move some furniture? And that's code for let's get it on. So when you do acute resistance training, you actually make more testosterone in the moment. Then you make more muscle, and the muscle itself makes more testosterone, which then strengthens your bones and strengthens your muscle. It makes you make more muscle and maintain more muscle. So that's really good. So you want to know and control your blood pressure, get regular screening for cholesterol and diabetes, prioritize physical activity, sleep, nourishing food, and stress support. I should look at the 7 steps to a healthy heart. You can take initiative with your doctors by sharing your menopause history and ask what age your period stopped. Was menopause natural or surgical? Did you go through menopause before age 40? My patients get a health history form before they come in, and that question is on there. How old were you when you stopped your periods, and how old were you when you started your periods? So the longer that you have been menstruating. So if you started at age 11 and finished at age 55, you have more of your lifespan that you've been under the influence of reproductive hormones. That's generally a healthy thing. It's not the only thing that makes you healthy, but it's helpful. And so then if you have less of those things, so say you started your periods at 16 and finished at 45, you want to just make sure that that person's doing all the food things we just talked about, you know, eating the fruits and vegetables, not eating the ultra processed food, getting regular exercise, getting resistance training, and doing all those good things that help your health. Menopause is not just a gynecological milestone. It can be a cardiovascular signal, especially when it happens earlier. So you work on your hypertension, your blood pressure, your cholesterol, your blood sugar. Smoking is just not good for you because oxidative stress, major oxidative stress, makes it harder to breathe. If it's harder to breathe, it's harder to exercise. You need exercise to keep your health going. You need exercise for oxygenation. Smoking deoxygenates you whether you're exercising or not, and then it makes it harder to exercise, which further deoxygenates you. So smoking, the big thing with smoking is oxidative stress, and also there's all kinds of toxic chemicals that happen when you smoke cigarettes, and they're very damaging to all kinds of tissues. And when you have that kind of oxidative stress, there are a lot of carcinogens, so they cause abnormal cell differentiation. You're more likely to get various kinds of cancers. And your weight, if you're overweight, if you're significantly overweight, then you're going to, the more overweight you are, the more body fat that you have, and the more inflammatory compounds are stored, and it takes insulin to maintain body fat, so the insulin tends to be higher, which is going to increase your inflammation and therefore your cardiovascular risk. So getting to a weight that really works for you is a good idea. Now, mind you, that doesn't mean that you should be counting calories and obsessing about the number on the scale. You will increase your cardiovascular health if you spend a week or two doing all these things. So don't worry about the numbers on the scale, but do eat fruits and vegetables, eat clean protein, stay away from ultra-processed foods, get regular exercise, do stress-reducing activities, get good sleep, drink water, get outside. All of those things, you will be much, much healthier regardless of your weight in a couple of weeks than at the point where you necessarily lose 40 pounds, for example. Now, when you lose 40 pounds, you've spent all that time, hopefully. I mean, some people do it in drastic ways, like a kind of fasting, or they're taking a drug to do it. And, you know, if somebody just struggles to lose weight, I am not against them trying the GLP-1 drugs if they want to do that. And just seeing, because the thing with the GLP-1 drugs is they are fraught and they have issues. And I've talked about why they have issues. You know, they don't just make you lose fat, they make you lose lean tissue as well. And in order to subvert that, you have to be very careful about eating lots of protein and getting your cardiovascular or getting your resistance training exercise. The problem with eating lots of protein is when you take the GLP-1, you don't feel like eating, which is why personally me, now if you want to take a GLP-1 or if you are and it's working for you, mazel tov, please do it. But for me, Fran, I'm not going to do that because I need my appetite to tell me what's going on in my body. And also, I really am not, I don't know if I have a little bit of irritable bowel, but I maintain it because I intuitively know what makes me feel good and what doesn't. So I mostly don't have symptoms. I know if a food makes me feel sick, I don't want to eat it. It doesn't matter what it is. So like onions and garlic are great for you, but if I eat them, I feel sick. So I don't eat them. I will eat some foods that are not so great for me, like dairy, because dairy is good for you. But on the other hand, it's not 100% great for me. So I eat a little bit of it because I enjoy it and it is nutritious. But I don't eat dairy every day. I mostly don't eat it. You know, I have a little bit of grass-fed cheese and maybe a bite or two of ice cream occasionally. And when I eat ice cream, I eat non-dairy ice cream, and I do much better with that. And I do much better if I don't have dairy. But eating in a way that works for you is ideal. Attending to diet and lifestyle is going to modify your cardiovascular risk. Who would have thought? It's not just a gynecological problem. It's something that when a woman is peri and postmenopausal, you have to really think about her cardiovascular health. And when you're younger and you have menopause, you have all that much more time during your lifespan where you're not exposed to regular estrogen, and your estrogen is a proliferative hormone. So it is proliferative. It helps the blood vessels to proliferate and be healthy. And it makes them more elastic, and you're less likely to have things like high blood pressure damage and therefore blockages in your arteries. So that's where you go. And that's cardiovascular disease and perimenopause. So I think that's it for basic topics for today. We just have a couple more minutes, so I just want to say the weather is getting nice. The weather's being crazy. It's being up and down. So in the same week, you could be wearing a sweater and a couple days later wearing shorts. I just looked at the long range for next week, and Tuesday the 14th is supposed to be 84 degrees. So I'm aghast, you know. So I'm like, do I wear shorts to work? What do I wear? And so that same week, the temperature is going to go down 30 degrees. And it's really, the weather's all over the place. And that's not great for your immune system. So just be careful to take it easy. This is a time to really start eating more of the fresh produce that's coming out. The first things that are coming out now are leafy greens, because they don't take a long time to grow. There's not local fruit so much right now. So I would recommend, if you're going to eat berries, a great way to get berries is to get frozen organic and make smoothies, and then, or make fruit salads if you don't mind that, or make crumbles, make fruit crumbles with a lot of fiber in them. Eating more whole foods right now is a really good idea, and trying to get away from the sugars and stuff. And if you enjoy a little bit of caffeine, think about doing iced tea. You can sweeten it with a little bit of monk fruit or stevia, or maybe a tiny bit of sugar. And that's going to have, even if you do a tiny bit of sugar, that's going to be a lot less calories than you've got the great big latte with the heavy cream and, you know, flavorings and sugars in them. So be aware of that. And then, you know, mind your allergies. And remember, you don't necessarily have to take drugs. You can drink nettle tea. You can spray your nose with xylitol nasal spray. And you can use a neti pot. You can clean your nose out with a cotton swab and some saline. And you can inhale essential oils from a diffuser. So things like rosemary and thyme and stuff like that. So those are some things that are going on right now. All right, that's all the time we have for today, so I'm going to let you go. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, Buzzsprout, and YouTube. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thank you for listening.